If you only had 24 hours to live and you had to teach your son or sons everything you learned about being a man, from life to love, money to marriage, people to porn, and everything in between, what lessons would you teach him? Well, when my son was only 12 years old, I wrote a book for him I wanted to leave behind as my legacy. It's called Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me. And I squeezed all of those lessons on manhood into just 124 pages. The lessons I share in this book not only come from my successes in life, but many of them also come from my painful and even shameful failures, including divorce, abuse, addiction, adultery, and abandonment, just to name a few. You can read and learn in less than 2 hours what it took me over 30 plus years to learn the hard way. So just go over to areyoutheman.com and get your copy today. That's areyoutheman.com. Trust me, your wife and children will thank you for it later.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. Guys, I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader that God has called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply, not only in your relationships, but on your job and in your community. Guys, today we have with us Pastor Brian Tome. Guys, let me tell you a little bit about Brian. For 25 years, Brian has been guiding men to their best lives, and he considers himself an avid adventurist. And Brian has experienced firsthand the primal power of challenge, brotherhood, and no-nonsense leadership. Among his many projects, he has launched Cincinnati's Crossroads Church, which is recognized as one of the largest and fastest growing churches in the nation. And he's been featured in an Amazon Prime adventure show. He's written 4 books, and some of you guys may know of one of his books in particular. It's a bestseller, The 5 Marks of a Man. And also, Brian hosts a weekly podcast called The Aggressive Life. And Brian's fresh approach has already led tens of thousands of men into lives of meaning and purpose. And he's married with 3 kids and lives in Cincinnati. Man, let me tell you guys, I invited Brian on the show today because one of the men in our Real Men 300 community texted me last month about this thing called Man Camp. And he asked me if I'd ever heard of it before and if I'd be interested in attending. Now, guys, in full disclosure, I had to remind him that I'm not an outdoors kind of guy. And even though I grew up in the hood, I'd rather face gangbangers than grizzly bears. So he said that we should invite Brian to the show. And guys, you know how I do. If you guys ask me for something, I'm going to try my best and give you my best attempt to do it. So I reached out to Brian's group, and guess what? He responded. And Brian's people invited him on the show today to let him come on to talk about this highly popular man camp, about its origins, its purpose, and its impact on men's lives. So Warrior Nation, join me today in welcoming my guest and hopefully new friend, Pastor Brian Tome, to the Real Men Connect podcast. Welcome to the show, Pastor Brian.
Hey, you're welcome, Joe. The only thing I can request, you can't be calling me Pastor Brian. I'm not calling you Podcaster Joe. I'm not calling you, Men's Ministry Joe. Just Brian. Brian's good enough.
Well, I wanted to know that you are a pastor, but Brian, I was going to tell you that. I was going to call you Brian anyway, whether you asked me to tell you that or not. Because, dude, you're a real dude, and I want to talk to you like a real dude today. And I'm excited because I tell you, I'm very inquisitive about this man camp that I want you to talk to us about today. But thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for being so gracious with your time because you are a really, really busy man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Everyone's busy.
I want
you to think that I'm busy. So, you think that I'm a hard worker. Actually, I got more discretionary time now than probably ever before. But let's not tell. Just don't tell anybody about that. Let's just keep that our secret.
Man, I just wish I could tell somebody that. But anyway, Brian, when we ask guys on the show, we always ask them their favorite Bible verse from the Word of God. What's their life verse or anchor verse? You've been adventurous. I can't wait to hear what your favorite Bible verse is. What's yours, man?
Well, if you said what's the life verse, it would probably be Colossians 1:27-28, where the Apostle Paul talks about laboring to present every man complete in Christ. I think that's still my overall one. But I'll tell you, if you just go like, what's the one you keep going to again and again and again? No question, it's 2 Timothy 1. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-discipline. God's not given us a spirit of fear. I tell you what, man, fear is ruling us in America. We are not the land of the free. We are the land of the fear. And I don't find believers any different than the average person. In fact, I find believers maybe more fearful because we got understandings of Armageddon and God's judgment and all kind of stuff. I'm just gonna tell you, man, when you're in fear land, you cannot have your best life. It doesn't work.
You know, I can tell right now you're going to have our guys pumped up and excited, and they can see why I'm excited to have you on the show, because you're absolutely right. I love that verse, 2 Timothy 1:7. That's not what he did not give us a spirit of fear. But I like how you just said that, Brian. You said that we're not living in the land of free, the land of the fear, because that seems exactly what I'm seeing every single day.
Well, it is. I mean, by any measurable statistic, Joe, we have more neuroses than any culture in the history of the world. We have more phobias than any culture in the history of the world. We take more medication for fear and anxiety than any nation in the history of the world. I think it's like 1 in 4 Americans. And hear me very clearly. I do believe there's such a thing as a chemical issue. I do believe drugs are good for a lot of folks. But come on. 1 in 4 are on anxiety meds? No. 1 in 4 do not have cancer. 1 in 4 of us do not have schizophrenia. No, that's it. We're just medicating one another. We live in the most insured culture in the history of the world. We have insurance for everything we can possibly think of that could go wrong with us. We have high savings rates, those of us who are able to, and it's all because we're trying to tamp down this ability for fears. Yeah, we are shackled. We got more seatbelts than any nation in the history of the world. We have more helmets. I mean, come on, man. You got to be kidding me. You're going to put a freaking helmet on your 3-year-old who's on his tricycle in your basement. You got a problem.
You know, you're absolutely right, man. I remember when we had moved to this new neighborhood, and this is with my first wife, and we let him outside. You know, friends, kids always like to play around with other kids. So I said, Kendall, go on outside. So his mom wanted to make sure he had everything on. And then my son met these other kids. We could see him from inside the house, but we couldn't hear the conversation. And she was saying, isn't that so sweet that he just made friends so fast? Look at those boys. Don't you just wonder what are little 7 and 8 year olds talking about like that? And they just met each other. I said, oh, I can tell you what they're talking about. I said, the other kids asked him, dude, what's up with that helmet? Why are you wearing it? We're the only one around here with the helmet. She elbows me, Brian, in the center. That's not what they're talking about. I said, this is ridiculous, man. We're trying, you know, God.
My friends would have beat me about the head with a lead pipe if I had a helmet on.
That's what I'm saying. I couldn't convince her that. You got want to protect the child? I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I always tell guys, I said, God gave us a life to be spent, not saved. No, Jesus died to save us, but now we are to spend our life and be empty by the time we go there. Now, it's funny I say that, and I'm talking from a perspective of a guy who's afraid of outdoors. But you're going to get me over that hump today, Brian.
I'm going to try to get you if you want to get over it.
I do, man. I do, because I am serious about it. And the guys who know me, they know that I am. I'm willing to push myself past my comfort zone. I'm willing to get uncomfortable. I'm willing to get uncomfortable with being uncomfortable. But Brian, let's get this. I was doing my research into you, and I was reading about you and everything. I want to get back into talking about little Brian. I want to know where it all started with you. What kind of home environment did you grow up in? Was it overprotective like that, or did it let you guys be free spirits? What kind of home did you grow up in, man?
Well, I was born at a very early age. And I lived a pretty, I don't know, a pretty average suburban lifestyle for the 70s. I graduated high school in 83, but my parents were, I'd just say, hey, get out of the house. Like, if me and my friends were trying to watch TV inside the house and it was an utter thunderstorm, they'd be like, what are you doing? Get out of here. Now, part of that was they didn't want to be around us at all, but it was just the kind of house, like, go out and ride your bike and climb trees and make tree houses. And
without a helmet.
Yeah, without a helmet, of course. No, nobody. And I never knew anybody who had a brain injury on a bicycle. Never.
Me either.
Now, again, let's go back. If you're going to be on a bicycle, you know, in your spandex, your pink and your green spandex, going 40 miles an hour. But by the way, we all know that you're not sponsored. I know you've got like Coca-Cola thing. We all know you're not sponsored. But if you're going to go like 35, 40 miles an hour down a hill, okay, fine. Wear the little helmet. I'm talking about wearing your Roadmaster bicycle around the neighborhood. But, you know, we just kind of did that. And it was just a sort of very active, just normal kid thing. And then life happens to you, right? You end up going to school, you end up going to college, you end up having your first job. And before you know it, you're just like everybody else. You're not getting out and you're not recreating and you're not having fun at all. You just got your head down and you're about your day job. And that was me until, you know, later on in life.
Now, did you grow up in a big family, small family, and how did you guys relate to each other?
We have two brothers and sisters. We were all adopted. So,
all
of us were adopted. Yes, my parents could not have biological kids of their own, which was never a big deal for me. People would say, "Oh my gosh, you're adopted. You're kidding." And my parents handled it great. I never remember hearing that I was adopted. I never remember learning that I was adopted. I just always knew. And they handled it really well. They told us we were special and they chose us. And that was really, really cool. So it wasn't a big deal for me. And actually, when I came to know Christ and I started reading the Bible years and years and years later, I realized that adoption's a big deal. In fact,
yes,
all of us are adopted. We're all adopted in God's family.
We're all adopted. Right, right.
Yeah, when I meet somebody who says, well, I've always known God. I know you do not know God. Nobody has always known God. That's a biblical impossibility. All of us get adopted into the family of God. That's what Romans in the book of John makes very, very clearly. So when I saw those parallels, it made my adoption even that much more special.
You know, I get a lot of backlash, Brian, when I tell people, because I'm in a second marriage and I have a child that's not my biological child, a daughter, and I have a son who's my biological child. And I get pushback when I tell them this. And I say that biological kids are overrated. I say it's something special about my daughter earning the title for her to call me daddy, whereas my son's been calling me that ever since he came out of the womb and when he can speak. But I had to earn the title because I realize now why God calls us his adopted, because she chose me. I did not choose her. She chose me. My son didn't have a choice.
Well, she didn't just choose you. But you also chose her.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because her dad abandoned her and I stepped in and she says, "Daddy, why do you always cry?" She's 18 now. She says, "Why do you always cry when you talk about your, you know, how much, you know, what, how you value the role of being my dad?" I said, "You don't get it. God could have chose anybody to be your dad, but he gave me the opportunity to be your father. And I take that responsibility very seriously." And I said, "I get it now." And I told my son, I said, "Kendall, I see that. I said, I love you, but it's something about hearing her say daddy that sounds different than hearing it from you. I can't explain it." I can't explain it. It just sounds different. Maybe because it's coming from a daughter, but I just say, it just sounds different. And my son, we're going to be celebrating his 25th birthday coming up this week. And so, but I mean, I love her dearly because I see now that's how God sees me. Man, he chose me. I chose her and she received that. And so we're getting off on a tangent, Brian. Let me get back to this, man. Now, with your parents, were they outdoors people too?
No.
They weren't?
No, definitely not. They were absolutely not outdoors people.
So where'd you get that from? How did that come about then? This is transitioning us into the man camp. Where did your love for outdoors come from?
It's a good story, I think. I came to Cincinnati to start a church called Crossroads. It's now in a number of different cities across the Midwest. And I was about 35 and I was in this men's group. And one of the guys in the men's group said, "Hey, I got an idea. Why don't we take our wives, do a little retreat, but let's go out to Vegas and let's rent Harley Davidsons, rent motorcycles, and let's just kind of cruise around the West and have a good time." I was 35, Joe. I was deep into trying to build the church, deep into all the other things that you got to do when you're 35. I had zero recreation in my life, zero fun. This This sounded like the most extravagant, ridiculous thing he could have mentioned. He may as well have said, "Hey guys, let's go down to the strip club and have a good time." That's how ridiculous it sounded. So I went. So I decided to go. My wife and I went. I hadn't ridden a motorcycle since I was in college, and I sold it like a week into marriage because I ran out of money. But I thought, well, these are guys I'm building into. I'm discipling them, so we'll go do this. And we went out, and it was amazing. I just tooling around out west. It was awesome. So then I had a fantasy coming back of let's actually get another motorcycle. So I got a street bike, and that was fine. But then it just kind of got boring. And my son came into the world, and I needed to take my son to swear him into manhood. A lot has been written on this. I'm sure.
Rites of passage, right.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter what the rite of passage is. It could be anything. It could be, we're going to go to a baseball game and I'm going to give you cotton candy and then you're a man. If the kid knows that earlier on in his life that that's coming, and that means that they're no longer a boy, that they're a man, then that works. So for me and my son, what we did was I took him on a motorcycle trip. And he was 17, which I thought was a really big moment of trust. I'm going to trust him on a motorcycle out west. But I said to him, "Jake, I can't afford gas for two motorcycles. I can't afford the food for you and I for 7 days, wherever this was. And I can't afford a hotel on top of that. I just can't do it. We're going to have to camp." Neither one of us had really camped before.
Wow.
And we went out and... man, what do you know? What was a money-saving thing ended up really being amazing because wow. if we were in a hotel room, we'd never be sitting around a campfire talking about deep stuff. We'd be looking at ESPN. No, when you're camping, you have this deep bonds of connection around the morning fire when you have your coffee, and then at evening when you're having your dinner or whatever your favorite beverage is or whatever your favorite cocktail is, and it just ended up becoming really, really special. So coming out of that, camping and being outside really became a big thing for me.
Well, so what I'm hearing you say, Brian, is that this came about more out of desperation than inspiration. You were trying to, you know, you guys just needed to cut some corners and survive this.
That sounds so courageous,
but it's amazing what you'll do when you feel desperate enough to do it. I joke around about me being, you know, this anti-outdoors person, but I look at what I survived growing up in the hood in Miami. And I know people look at me like, "How could you survive that?" Well, I didn't have a choice. You know, it's either like you were saying, "Hey, we got to do this to survive," and not realizing now as I look back, wow, I learned a lot of lessons from that experience. So I'm putting in that same type of vein. Now you mentioned something. Well, I saw something on your website that you mentioned something called the Code of Manhood. The Code of Manhood. Oh, what does that mean? The Code of Manhood. What are you referring to?
Well, I've studied manhood and I've studied men, all the biographies I've read, the things in the scriptures, the people who've come across my path. There are boys and there are men. There is such a thing as a 15-year-old man and there's such a thing as a 55-year-old boy. I know both of them. And what separates them? What separates them is not having received Christ. I know a lot of males who've received Christ and been baptized and know their Bibles, and they are boys. They're utter boys. They're not the kind of people that inspire others and make a mark in the world. And so there's five things, and these are the things I try to build into my son. That's code. One is, and these aren't numerical order, they're just the rough things. One is a man has a vision for his life, and a boy lives day to day. Men will deal with difficult circumstances because they have something they're working toward, where a boy will never want difficult circumstances. He just wants a good day. Second, a man works and a boy plays. Man never wants to retire. He may get booted out of corporate America and he may not be able to work 50 hours a week anymore, but he needs to be productive. Adam was put in the garden to work before sin came in. So a man works, a boy just wants to play. Third, a man is a team player. And a boy wants to be MVP. Men lean into one another. They understand their role. They push forward that way. Four, men are protectors and boys are predators. Boys take, get whatever they want. Well, she said I could have sex with her. She said it was okay. That's what a boy says. Or a man says, no, I want to protect my mind. I want to protect my future marriage. I want to protect this woman's future marriage if she doesn't get married to me. I want to be generous financially because I want to protect people. And then number five, a man takes a minority position where the boy has to be in the majority. Men, we have to get used to saying, I'm not going to be like everybody else, and people aren't going to understand my beliefs. You get me talking about sex, Joe? I know I'm the weird guy in the room. I know I am getting judged. I know I sound like a hater when I talk about how sexes operate. And I'm fine, because you're already on the wrong side of history. You're already on the wrong side. Well, if you're outside the biblical understanding of that, you're already on the wrong side. History is abundantly clear on that. And I'm used to being in the minority with that. I'm used to being in the minority with what I believe about giving. I'm used to being in the minority with what I believe about disciplining kids. And as a man, you're gonna have to be comfortable with that. So that's the code.
You know, and I'm glad you covered those, Brian, because if they haven't gotten your book, The Five Marks of Manhood, you talk about that extensively in your book. And I know that they will probably want to wring my neck and say, Joe, I know you brought them on to talk about Man Camp, but man, you got to ask them about that man code, you know, the code of manhood, because you're absolutely right. You know, I want to go back now. We're going to get back into the man camp, but I want to go back to your son. You said your son went with you, Jake. You took Jake with you on that trip.
Yes, sir.
What was his response afterwards, after 7 days of enduring that with you, because you were doing it out of desperation and you got something great out of it, but did he feel the same way? What was his response?
Oh, absolutely. He did. It was a highlight moment for both of us. The only time I've ever seen him cry. He's a lot like his dad. We're not all that emotional in terms of crying. The only time I've seen him cry was the night when I brought him into manhood, which is the last night on the trip, when we brought him into the campfire. And I had the guys with me who said, hey, we want to welcome you into the fraternity of men today. And we went around and built into him and gave him a little gift. It had a huge impact on him coming out of that. And the whole camping thing definitely changed our recreation patterns. It actually changed our whole family's recreation patterns.
So, but Brian, how do you go then? You went from that trip to, how did that transition and segue into man camp? How did that turn into that?
Yeah, this is good. So I said, okay, I need to start doing more trips where I'm on motorcycles with guys camping. So we started doing that. And Joe, time and time again.
So it's motorcycle guys camping. That's
right. Exactly what it was.
Going camping. That's funny.
Exactly. And it was that way for years, just going out with some buddies for the weekend or a week. And then finally one morning we were in Kentucky, and I said to the guys around the fire, we just had a very difficult day. The previous day was very, very difficult. It had rained. There was a lot of tough stuff, which always elevates our game as men. It always enables us to lean into one another. It's a real male bonding experience, like having a beer can never be. And we were sitting around the fire in the morning before we were heading home, and I said, guys, what can we do to help more guys with this? Because we talk about things that we don't talk about when we're back home. Guys get vulnerable. We laugh ways that we don't laugh before. We just go home stronger. What can we do that doesn't demand that somebody has a motorcycle? And doesn't, you don't have to be on a motorcycle to be a man, but something happens with us in here. You know, it's interesting, Joe, before I get into the man camp, you know, I don't know if you know these statistics. Statistics vary a little bit from one source to another, might vary a percentage point or two one way or the other, but it's basically men, we are four times more likely to die of suicide than women. We are three times more likely to have a mental illness than women. And we are two times more likely to have an alcohol abuse related incidence, a DUI, something like that. The Bible says that the enemy has come to steal, kill, and destroy. We are being killed right now. Men are being killed. We are being worn down. Things are not well on the masculine scale at all. Every single statistic about men says things are not well. I'm not saying that men have it easier in America than women do. I don't think that at all. I'm just saying the health indicators are not good for us at all. And I think part of the problem is we're experiencing things that no man in the history of the world on every corner of the globe has ever experienced. And we just don't know how to cope with it. So like one is where as men are dealing with our wife who might be out earning us, because women are now better educated than men. And so therefore they're getting better jobs. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I wish my wife earned more than me.
I'd buy
more motorcycles. But I'm just going, as a man, you can't look to your dad or your grandfather and say, well, how were they when mom was the primary bread earner?
Right.
It's just different, you know? Yeah. We're dealing with, and we're not doing things that every man in all of history has done. I just got into hunting in the last 2 years. The reason was because every man in the history of the world has killed something and eaten something. And I never have.
Me either.
Well, you're normal, Joe. Right. You're normal. When you think about things that men have done, I'm talking about for millennia. We've slept outside. We have pooped in the woods. We have killed things. We have built things. We have maintained things. The average man is not doing a single solitary one of those things. The average guy has never slept outside. You just have to recognize you're removed from your anthropological roots if you haven't learned to sleep outside, because every single man in the history of the world, instead of for the last 100 years or so, has done that. And most men across the world still do that. You're removing yourself from your roots. So I'm not saying that men are weenie boys if we're not camping or if we're not hunting. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying, though, is that I believe there is a primal urge that's coded in our DNA to do certain things that we're just not doing anymore. The average guy doesn't build anything anymore. We don't know how to build anything. We don't know how to maintain our cars. I just think that this dings our self-confidence. I think this short circuits us. Again, I pay someone to change my oil. I'm not saying you have to go put on your own addition in the house. I'm just saying holistically, as we look at the things that we're dealing with as men, it's an environment that's ripe for depression. It's an environment that's ripe for loneliness, and that's what we are. And so Man Camp came around to say, let's try to get guys in a sort of primal environment. Let's have folks hiking with their packs. Let's have campfires. Let's sing. There's another one, singing. In our culture today, singing is kind of what the women do. In fact, if you go on YouTube and you just look at the cool worship songs, and you'll see one of the new filming ethics is to have a bunch of people in the crowd or in the circle, and they're singing. Watch how many people are women in those. Like 8 out of 10 people in those worship environments are women. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 people in churches are women, because we speak the language of femininity in culture. We don't speak the language of men. But men tend to not sing. This is not good, because if you look again in all of anthropological history, whenever a man goes into battle, he sings. He gets with his brothers and he sings. It's a war song. It's a chant. He sings. So at Man Camp, we have worship and guys sing, and it's singing like you've never heard before, because guys are like,
and there's together. No instruments. There's not a choir. There's not.
Well, there is instruments. So yeah. We bring electricity. Use? Well, there's a big top tent for our meetings. So, you know, we'll have, oh gosh, the last Man Camp, 2,000 guys came into the big top
Good
tent.
Gracious. Wow.
Yeah. So we've had 17,000 guys go through the experience. The largest we've had, I think, is 2,400. And then I'm doing these little itty bitty one-off events with like 100 to 300 guys as well. But we have our next big, huge one's coming up in the fall. We're anticipating that to be in the thousands. So yeah, guys come in, and we actually don't want to tell everybody what happens, because we like giving people a sense of surprise. When's the last time you went on an adventure? An adventure means you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Right.
As soon as you know what's going to happen, it's not an adventure anymore.
Right.
But I will tell you that you get to you hike in. There's campfires. There's sessions with some teaching and some worship in a big top tent. There's a lot of tobacco. There's a lot of laughing. There's just good stuff.
Now, Brian, you know, as apprehensive as I can be, and I'm notorious for being known for the person. I mean, I admit my fears and my doubts and my insecurities, but I try to press through them because I know I'm leading men. And you said something that was really convicting to me. And I don't think I've ever shared this on the air before with anybody, but when you feel the Holy Spirit, we prayed before we came home, and the Holy Spirit is moving. You got to say, okay, forget you. Some man out there needs to hear this. When you're talking about the sleeping outside and the killing something you eat and everything, and because of course the natural thing is to say, okay, have I done any of those things? And I've attempted a lot of those. Now, I haven't attempted to kill anything yet that I can eat, but I got to tell you something that I haven't shared on the air before with anybody. that when my son was younger, I tell you, he's getting ready to turn 25 this Friday, but Kendall had to be about maybe 6 or 7. And I wanted to experience camping with him because, you know, they say dads always take the kids camping. And I just told you how I feel about outdoors, but I'm saying, okay, forget about you, Joe. This is a thing that your son will remember and everything. And so I went to the store and got all the camping gear and I needed to know and to get, and we decided we're going to do it in our backyard, We got a pretty big size backyard. And so I started setting up the tent. All right. And I'm, you know, most men don't like looking at directions. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to look at directions. I'm not going to try to fix this by myself, put this together by myself, but I'm going to just do exactly what they tell me to do. Now, typically, Brian, how long does it take to pitch a tent? Typically, elaborate tent. How long?
Well, if you're experienced, you should be able to get your tent up in, you know, 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Now, if you're not experienced, typically, how long would it take?
Oh, if you're not experienced and you don't read the directions, oh gosh, it could take you 3 hours.
All right. But if you read the directions, typically how long should it take you?
I would say if you read the directions first time person, I'd probably say half hour.
All right. So I'm reading it, so I should be in the half hour category, right?
Yeah.
And I have a doctorate degree. Okay. Well, I was on hour 4.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't get it together, Ryan. And my son came to me. He said, "Dad, is everything all right?" And I broke down crying. He said, "Dad, are you okay?" I said, "I'm all right." And I never told my son what was going through my heart and in my head. And what was going through my heart, Brian, was, and I have a dad to teach me how to do this. Here I'm trying to be a man. What kind of man am I if I can't even pitch a tent and follow instructions? And I felt, and I know that's not my true identity in Christ, but I felt so bad, Brian. I think maybe that has poured into the reason why I'm so reluctant about being in the outdoors, because it would expose all my inadequacies and my insecurities and my vulnerabilities, even though I know that's what we're supposed to be getting together to do. But that bothered me to no end that I could not do that. And do you know, I have not been camping since. So I told you that I want to come to Man Camp, and I need to come to Man Camp. And I wish, and maybe I'm going to invite my son. Maybe my son will come with me to Man Camp.
Well, this is, thanks for sharing that tender story. I can still see the pain of that experience.
Yeah, man, it hurts.
Yeah, it does. So, man, thanks for the strong move of doing that. That's powerful. As guys, we never want to be a beginner, you know, which is why very few guys ever start something new. No one wants to pick up golf and then they're just, you know, at age 40 and they're driving golf balls in the woods. You know, no one wants to pick up camping at age 30 and it takes them 4 hours to figure something out. It's a painful thing. What we do with that at Man Camp, that's why everybody who signs up for Man Camp, they get a trip captain. And that trip captain interacts with them via text or Zoom calls beforehand, making sure people have the right gear, making sure people share things. Because, you know, a lot of guys don't have anything, and oftentimes they don't have to buy anything because other guys in the group say, "Hey, you can sleep in my tent," whatever. And you go in as a unit. It's not an individual, I'm on my own, because men are team players. So you go in as a team. And you work it out, and no one ever has to feel stupid that they don't know how to set up a tent, because somebody there does. And somebody else there probably knows how to cook half decent, you know? And somebody else there just has a bunch of stupid jokes that they tell, you know? Everybody has something. And so that's what we do at Man Camp.
Man, I see, I love that, Brian, that you guys do that, because I can see the camaraderie from that, because we do have a lot of fears that we have as men that we don't like to express to other men because it makes us seem like we're weak. But the guys know, even in our community, that we talk about these things because we have to talk about them, because I always say this: if you don't tell the truth and shame the devil, he will use a lie to shame you. And he would take what you're trying to hide and what you're trying to bury and suppress, and he will use that to oppress you and get you not to step out. You know, because I know the Spirit had me share that, because I think somebody needs to hear it, because I can't be the only one who has those feelings of inadequacy and that I'm not measuring up. There's so many things I never learned how to do. And it's hard to go ask somebody, hey, teach me how to do this. But that's exactly what our ministry is about. We are helping men become men who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, who still have realized they don't know what it takes to be a man. But Brian, let me ask you this. What do you say to the critics out there? Because you know they're always going to be critics. And you guys have had a lot of success. But what do you say to the critics who think man camp is just more toxic masculinity from the Christian community? Have you guys gotten any backlash like that? And if so, how do you respond to your critics?
Yeah, we get two extreme criticism on either end. When on the one end is we have people who see the little video clips online and will say, is this gay? Is this for people who are gay?
Really?
Yeah, because they see guys like having fun with each other, no women around, or quote unquote, do we get to shower together as well? You know, that's the criticism's just
wow.
Because our view of masculinity is like guys shouldn't be having fun with one another.
Wow.
You shouldn't be. It's really depressing that way. A lot of that's the most common comments on social media when we push kind of basically ads for Man Camp out. But then on the other hand, yeah, there is the toxic masculinity and toxic. First of all, you can be a man and never take up camping as your hobby. I'm not saying that every man should camp seven nights a week or seven nights a year. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if we don't have some baseline of comfort with being outdoors, I think there's something missing from us. And so what I try to tell people is this is about helping men be more skilled, not fitting into a paradigm. You don't have to drive a truck to be a man or shoot a gun or something like that. You need to just understand who God has created you to be and be that person. So that, and people will criticize that all the time because very few people know what a man is.
So now, as far as with the churches, obviously we have quote men in the church, and yet we're not experiencing stuff like this and what you're doing with Man Camp. Why do you think churches struggle so much in reaching men to get them to want to do stuff like this with the guys, even in their own church?
The whole structure of church from beginning to end is wired towards our core audience. And our core audience in churches is women. That's our core audience. Now, no one would say that, and they wouldn't even realize that, but it is women. Who in the family's voice is most significant in choosing a church? It's the wife's church. It's the wife's choice. If she doesn't like the church, she's not going to go. And the guy is going to want to support her on that. And the woman chooses the church. If you take a look at a study done a number of years ago about the average pastor has a lower testosterone count than the average guy who's in business. If you take a look at our church programs, their learning programs, go to a room and learn, go to a small group, sit in a circle with a book on your lap. No normal guy wants to sit in a circle with a book on his lap.
Right.
Now, maybe you or I do, Joe, because we're more advanced in our faith. We realize we want to develop our mind that way. Maybe you and I will do, but the average guy has to do something.
Do something, right.
Okay, what are we going to do together? Are we going to go to a movie and then talk about the movie? Are we going to build a deck? Are we going to go on a hike? Are we going to play basketball? Are we going to go camp? I mean, if you have guys who are doing things, then the conversation can come out with that. But many churches are not wired that way. And so that's why we have such a crisis in masculinity in the church in our country. The most committed people to Christ are women in our country. And I think that's awesome. It's wonderful we have so many women who are committed. As pastors, the question we get most often, and the question I'm going to ask God is, God, why were there so many good Christian women and so few good Christian men to go around? Why is that? It's because I don't know what God's going to say. We'll see what he says. But I'm just saying that the ratios are off, and that's not the way it is, say, in Islam. In Islam, the most committed people to their religion are men. Not here in American Christianity. So we're fundamentally doing something wrong. And therefore, when you see something that has a Christian foundation and looks masculine, it's going to be accused of being toxic masculinity. No, it's not. You just haven't seen anything masculine in the church, like ever.
Yeah, so it looks foreign to us when we actually do see it.
I got a guy coming in. I got a guy coming. He's in town right now. I'm meeting with him in the next few hours for lunch. He's got a ministry. He's a former rodeo chaplain. He was on the pro rodeo circuit himself. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Those right. guys. I mean, there's a bunch of good old boys. You think about it. Somebody who's in the rodeo probably comes from the heartland of America, probably has a church background, you know? And so they have chapel services, just like the NFL has chapel services. So he was a chaplain for them, and then he started his own ministry. And what he does, he talks about how we can hear from the voice of God. And he actually is a really, really well-known breaker of wild horses. Bring a wild horse to him, he can break it like wow. better than anybody. It's really impressive. So he does this whole teaching of how God speaks to us, and he uses a wild horse that he's going to break in a 50-minute span while teaching how God speaks to us, how God deals with us,
Lord.
Just like, yeah, God, he says, God deals with us in the same way I'm dealing with this wild horse right now. So I heard his spiel, and we talked, and I said, man, I need to have you at my church, and have you here at church. And he's like, well, no churches, I've never been in any church. They always say they want it, but no one ever does. I said, well, you'll meet the first one. So we have three services on Sunday morning. We're trying to find three wild horses, and we have to put up a 40 foot corral on stage and sawdust. And he's going to every service break a new horse and give his whole talk. Like in the, you know, horse poop's going to be all over the place. The horses pee. Who knows? Someone in the front row might get peed on. Yeah, right. Exactly. and like people are like, man, that's why would you do that in church? Well, first of all, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? I want people to understand God. And if I can use this to help people hear from God, I'm going to do it. And I'll tell you right now, word gets on the street, the word's going to make it on the street. This is what's happening. You watch our male attendance spike.
I know.
Now, yes. I don't care what sermon series I do. I don't care, come this week and learn about the adventure of life. No, but you do something tactile because men, we like tactile things. And you could possibly get into hanging out with men, but my goodness, the way it is. Why would no church ever have that inside their building? They don't want the risk. They don't want to deal with the, because why? Because there's a spirit of fear inside of our churches.
Yeah, that's how we began this.
I told our folks, I said, I don't even know if we want to tell the insurance company about this, because we are doing this. With this, be very clear, this is happening.
Brian, I was, you know, and it's funny you mentioned it, because I was going to ask you, I'm like, because I'm getting this picture as you were talking, and now you actually answered the question for me. I'm thinking, what is this guy's services like at his church with this kind of attitude, with this outlook? I said, I can imagine going to Brian's church. And then, of course, you unleash this on me that you guys are bringing in. Somebody's going to bring a horse in there and he's going to break a horse. I'm like, okay, you answered my question. That's what his services are like.
Now, the truth of the matter is most Sundays we look like the average church, except we're a little more salty. I mean, we got the same number and type of music. We still got, you know, 35-minute speaking stuff. I mean, you know, you'll hear some more salty language or maybe some more aggressive illustrations maybe than the average church. But for the most part, we look like a normal church on the weekends. But then when we have a chance to try something entirely different.
Yeah, to break up the monotony of it, yeah.
We're all out. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke on manna falling from heaven. And we have these catwalks over most of our buildings. So we had a bunch of frosted flakes. People bought corn flakes. And at a certain point of service, we had people up in the catwalks dumping cornflakes on people's head because that's basically what manna was like. You know?
Right.
Again, that's that tactile thing. And that's not that women don't want that. It's not that women don't enjoy that. But men, guys especially, come alive when there's something tactile that we can do.
You know, I want to make sure I have time for the man-up question because I'm just anxious to ask you the man-up question because I have them personally just for you. But I'll end with this last question before we switch to that segment of the show. Obviously, you've impacted a lot of men. And I know this is hard for you to probably pinpoint one, but you probably have so many memorable stories of man camp that you could share with us. Is there one in particular that you said, no matter what, I will never forget this? It was that one thing for you said, wow. If we didn't do man camp for anything, it was for this one reason. Do you have a story like that comes to mind?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I have a story coming to mind only because it's the most recent one.
Oh, okay.
My kids called me goldfish because I have the memory of a goldfish. So I'll just give you the most recent one.
Okay.
So we have a thing called a mash tent. Here I am telling you things about Man Camp I shouldn't be.
Yeah, he shouldn't be telling them. He said, but oh, yeah, we'll keep it quiet.
MASH 10, which is Man Camp works because you have a bunch of very extreme things that all come together. And if you don't have these extreme things, it doesn't work. So when other places say, we want to do our own Man Camp. Well, if you don't do all these things, it won't work. It'll just be a men's retreat. So when you say all these things, what does that mean? That means I think we had 2,000 guys. I think we went through 60 kegs of beer.
Good Lord.
With 2,000 dudes. And right beside where the kegs are is a prayer tent. And I'm talking like charismatic prayer, like
Billy Graham type stuff.
Right. So I just met with this guy last week. He said, what happened was my buddy said, hey, let's go to the prayer tent. So I went to MASH tent, and the guy said, they came because there's always a line. It's fascinating. There's an equal line getting into the prayer tent as there is at the beer kegs, which is says something really cool. Like it's really awesome. And they come and say, okay, we got somebody in here to pray with you and hear your story. And his buddy said to him, why don't you go first? Because his buddy was first, he was second line. So he goes in, sits down, and he says, hey, I was in the Army. I woke up one morning and there was a towel on the side of my bed. And I realized there was chloroform in it. Someone attacked me and raped me in the Army. And all this stuff is coming out. It was in basic training. And I'm not equipped to handle it. The two guys are there to pray for him. They look at each other, and the guy sees them looking at each other. He's thinking, oh, are they judging me now? He balls up his fists. He says, if they have some churchy comment or something, we're getting in a fight right now. And one of the guys says, I had the exact same thing happen to me in boot camp when I was in the Army. God had uniquely wired that person to be with that person at that exact moment. And that guy's life is different today. So I could tell you about arm wrestling competitions, and I could tell you about, you know, I'm not going to tell you about more things and ruin more things. But when you see that life change happen, Joe, I mean, that's what it's all about. And by the way, we wouldn't be having guys who are having those transformative experiences if we said, no alcohol allowed. It wouldn't. We wouldn't have that. You don't have to drink to come to Man Camp. There's a lot of people who should not drink at all, and they're on the road to recovery. It's awesome, awesome. Or you just don't like alcohol. Great, great, great. But the vast majority of men who, if they're out in the middle of the woods around a campfire, they're going to crack a beer or have some bourbon. And there's something wrong with, as churches, we're afraid to make allowance for that. When we're afraid to make it, we're just sending a message. We're more afraid of what might happen than actually meeting where you are as a man. And that's why men have left the church. We don't understand them. We're not meeting them where they are.
You know, and thank you for sharing, man. What a great, powerful story. I'm thinking if that's the one you recently remember, I can't imagine some of the other stories that you've already forgotten about to share. You know, I wanted to get into the man of questions, but I realize now we're going to be short on time. But maybe I'm just using that as a ploy, Brian, to get you back on the show again. Because, I mean, you were a great guest, man. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your insights, man, being so gracious with your time, because I want to encourage men to go to Man Camp. I'm going, I told you, I'm committing myself to going in the fall with at least one guy, but I'm going to hopefully try to bring a team of guys with me to Man Camp, because I need it for me. I need it for these guys. I need it for us as a team and as leaders of our organization and our ministry. But Brian, if for our people, if they wanted to reach out to you and find out more about Man Camp, about you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you, man?
Best way is probably briantome.com. It's all in there. www.briantome.com. You can see some articles I've written. You can see a direct link to Man Camp and explanation about it right there. So that's where I send folks. briantome.com.
Thank you, Brian, for that. I really appreciate it. That should be easy enough for us to remember. That's briantome.com. briantome.com. We'll put all of Brian's information in the show notes, so you guys will have easy access to that if you want to reach out to them or even register, because I'm going and I'm hopefully taking an army full of guys with us when we go as well. And guys, do us a favor. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us, because it's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. Guys, you made us the number one podcast on Apple Podcasts for Christian men, and we couldn't have done it without your help. So please don't keep us a secret. Keep sharing us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, stay connected, because real men do connect. But most importantly, stay in God's grip, and I'll see you soon.